Nightlife with Philip Clark
on ABC Radio.
Yes, the latest adjustment of Centrelink benefits has delivered one of the biggest ever increases in welfare payments, largely thanks, of course, to Australia's rocketing inflation rate. The full rate of the single pension rose on March the 20th by $37.50 a fortnight to $1,064. That's an extra $76.40 a fortnight, increase of more than 7.7% since this time last year. So, yeah, almost on par with inflation. To tell us more, to take us through some other developments too, including the UK pension rules available here, and just how much do you need to retire fairly comfortably after the pension rises. We're joined once again by Nick Bruning, independent financial advisor. Good evening. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Thank you, Phil. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Well, great to have you with us too. I guess they're supposed to be pegged to inflation, aren't they, these pension rises? So it's not really as though you're suddenly getting a windfall.
Well, no, but in fact, it's tied to one of three things, Phil. So we have CPI, which has, as you mentioned, been rocketing ahead 7.7% year on year. But it's also linked to a thing called the Pension Beneficiary Living Cost Index, which is another measure that's used. And that sort of takes out mortgage expenses. And then the third one they use is male total average weekly earnings. And the pension's tied to a percentage of that. So every 6 months, on the 20th of March and on the 20th of September, Services Australia have a look to see which one's gone up the most. And that's what the pension goes up by. So you're right. At the moment, we're talking CPI. Mm-hmm. And $1,064 per fortnight for a single person, and a couple, it comes up to $1,604. So per annum, we're talking $27,660 or thereabouts for a single, and about $41,704 for a couple. Now, the significance of those rates going up, Phil, is that it actually lifts the upper limit where you get kicked off the pension. And the significance of that is that someone that might have just missed out previously, it's worth keeping an eye on these things, because that goes up twice per year. And then in July, we've got the indexation of the lower threshold. So that lifts it all up again. So what it means is that a home-owning single, and it doesn't matter about the value of your house, but if you've got assets of less than $634,750, you'd qualify for a part pension under the asset test. And the income, the asset test for a couple that owns a home is $954,000.
So now, nearly a
million. It is. And that's, by the time July rolls around, July 1st, which is when the lower thresholds get indexed, at the moment, the lower threshold for a couple is $419,000. And for a single is $280,000. Again, not including the family home, no matter what that's worth. With inflation running at the rate it is, almost certainly that will clear $1 million in assets over and above your family home, and you would be qualifying for a part pension if you're a member of a couple. Incidentally, non-homeowners get an extra $224,500 over and above those figures. It's very, very debatable. You could buy a house for $224,500 anywhere.
I don't think you could.
No.
Maybe in rural South Australia.
That's right. It's next to the freeway or something. I don't know. But look, it's a challenge to get a home for that sort of price. But nonetheless, that's the way the system operates. So I guess the significance also is the fact that for some people who have been investing in property, perhaps they would have seen a bit of a decline in the value of those properties in the last 12 months or so. And even some share portfolios have seen a bit of a dip. It's just worth checking to see what the values of those are. And if you're now under that $634,750 a single and $954 if you're a couple, it might be worth waddling along to Centrelink and putting a claim in. Because the other thing is that you don't actually get a dollar of pension. It's a bit complicated, but they have these things called supplements. Mm. The least you'd get if you're a single, supplement is $56.30 a fortnight, and a couple is $84.80 a fortnight. So, but of course, you've got that magic mauve purple concession card, which
That's the thing. You get the concession card, don't you? Yeah,
you do. And that, and pretty much in every state, you're going to get discounts on local government charges and medicines, of course. And there are doctors out there, Phil, that still bulk bill pensioners, so that can save you a few dollars as well. In fact, the Association of Independent Retirees have worked out, depending on where you live in Australia, because different states have different rules, but the savings can be up to $7,000 a year for a couple just by having those cards. So yeah, quite valuable. Again, dependent on where you live, but quite valuable. So yeah. Worth looking at. Definitely
indeed.
Worth looking at.
Now, this UK pension arrangement, what's going on here? What's this particular lurk, or is it a lurk?
Now, I'm really, and I'm the most conservative financial planner out there. When I hear of something that's too good to be true, I put up all the warning bells. But this really is a money for jam type deal. So we're talking about the UK National Insurance Scheme, which is the equivalent of the Australian Centrelink system.
Right.
The huge difference is that there is no means test whatsoever for the UK pension. So that's why multimillionaires in the UK, Phil, receive a pension from the government. Yep.
Is that really?
There's no means test whatsoever. What it's linked to
Rishi Sunak would get a parliamentary pension.
Yeah, but he'd also get this state pension, the new state pension from, yeah, it's amazing.
What, Elton John gets a pension?
Yep. Yep.
Gee whiz.
Yeah, maybe they donate it. They do the right thing. Yeah. I'm sure Elton John and everyone else doesn't need the pension. But how it works, though, it's linked to how many years you contribute to the National Insurance Scheme. So it's based on contributions. Now, the thing is, you don't actually have to be an expat Brit to qualify for this. You only need to have worked in the UK for 3 years. So there'd be a lot of our listeners that spent some time in the UK.
Hang on, say that again.
You don't have to be a UK citizen to qualify for this pension.
If you've worked in the UK for three years,
you've got eligibility to the scheme.
At any stage in your life.
Yeah. Now, hang on, there's strings attached to this. Okay?
Surely there are strings.
There are. You need to have at least 10 years' worth of contributions to qualify for some pension, okay?
Right.
Now, if you've worked for three, and here's the thing, this is the beaut thing about this scheme, you can contribute as though you're still in the UK, even though you live in Australia. Right? As though, yeah, you're still there. And the thing is, if you left the UK and you're working immediately prior to your departure from the UK, each year costs you £163.80. Now, that works out to be about, I don't know, $350 or something
not
like
not
that.
Not a big deal.
Each year that you contribute buys you 1/35th of the pension, right, which is £203 a week. And look, if people want to find out a lot more about the detail, netplan.com.au is my site. It's all on there. But the key is this. If you pay that money back to the UK, the return on the investment is I'm not joking, it's about 185% because you pick up an extraordinary amount of pension by making those
payments. If you went over there as a backpacker or whatever and worked for
three years,
You're eligible you'd really to worth. You'd really be sensible to pay the $350 a year,
Phil. We have
from
been
this
doing
end
this.
From this yep. end for the next 4 years, and then and then you qualify.
Ah, but wow. Phil, wait. There's more. There's more. One of the things that the UK system also allows you to do is to back pay stuff that you've missed. Now, normally, the most you can go
even
back.
Better.
Is 6 years worth, right?
Right.
But there's a special concession that closes on the 31st of July this year. So we've got a couple of months to sort it out where you can actually top up an extra 10 years. So you could literally go back 16 years and pay it. Now, you know, we talk about superannuation and return on investment. I mean, if you're at all eligible for this, you've got to follow it up because it really is a fantastic scheme.
Well, it's as you say, it's an investment
money
that returns around 185%.
Well, what I've seen, people, we had a gentleman that paid back 9 years' worth, and he's ended up now 10 years down. He's received back $70,000 for his $6,000 outlay. That's what he's worked out to be. What it's meant is that he's now got a whole stack of money that wasn't his super that he doesn't have to use to generate an income. And he's used that money to go on trips back to England and have a good time with it. So it's absolutely worth looking into. What are the risks? Well, you've got a risk with currency. You've got a risk with death, quite honestly, Phil. If you pay into this scheme and you don't make it to the UK eligibility age, which is currently 66 and going to 68, then I guess you've done your dough. So that's a risk with it. But, you know, for most of us, it will probably go beyond 66.
That's money for jam, isn't it?
It is. Totally. Yep.
Really?
And, you know, guaranteed by His Majesty.
Yes. Charles himself.
He's signing the checks, Phil. No. And you get it paid every 4 weeks or 13 weeks, you can choose. And in case anyone says, what about Centrelink? The fact is, if you've been here for more than 10 years, this income is treated like any other sort of income. So you don't lose a dollar of Aussie pension for every dollar you get from the UK, it counts towards your income for a year, and then you lose potentially 50 cents. But even so, it's still really good. Yep.
Yeah, gee, that's interesting, isn't it? Mm. This turmoil that overseas banks are experiencing, what are you making of this? Is it going to affect us?
Look, one of the things that's really good about Australia is our banking system. The prudential controls over the Australian system has been really good, world class. In fact, following the global financial crisis, there are a number of countries that sort of took note of what happened here and have started to copy it. What you've got in the US is, 52 states with 52 different systems, because each state has their own sort of banking authority. There's no real centralised control of things. So the chances of what happened in the UK or the US happening here is pretty remote. Notwithstanding that, we have the financial claim scheme, which we've mentioned before, and that guarantees the first $250,000 per account holder per institution. So if you are at all concerned, you just spread your money around a bit amongst a few different banks, and if you're a couple, then you'd have perhaps one in each name of the account. The thing that I am concerned about, though, Phil, are those funds out there which promise, you know, returns which kind of look like bank accounts, but aren't. And you know, these are paying sort of 5-6%, and they talk about, you know, oh, you can get your money back in 90 days, but only if we let you have it. Those things start to worry me a bit at the moment. Well, they've worried me for a while, but as we've seen interest rates rocket up, these things potentially could get caught. So if everyone wants their money back at the same time, do they have the cash to pay out? If you read the fine print, which is now much bolder, thanks to some intervention by ASIC, it says quite clearly the return of your capital is not guaranteed. And unfortunately, I've seen over my 34 years plenty of examples where things that people thought were perfectly safe and they'd been around for 50 years and they'd done this and done that ended up unfortunately losing a lot of their money. So just be really careful. Banks are fantastic at the moment. I checked today on Canstar. They've got they're saying that you can get a bank account at call for a 4-month honeymoon period where they give you a sort of a sweetener deal. 5%. 5% per annum for 4 months. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And you can get your money out whenever you want. And that's with big banks. And we're not talking about, you know, tiny little things. These are big organisations and backed by the financial claim scheme. So to answer your question, pretty comfortable about Australian banks and deposits. In fact, very comfortable about that. Less so about some of those non-bank type income-paying investments. Those are the things that potentially could get in trouble if everyone wants their money back at the same time.
Mm. Okay, just before we take some calls, with the age pension rise, what does it mean now for those who want to retire comfortably? How much do you need for a comfortable retirement? This is
my favourite question, Phil.
I bet you get asked this at least once an hour.
Yeah, pretty much. Look, it is, and it's a figure that's thrown, a few people throw it around. There's the $1 million figure. The Superannuation Association's just revised their figure saying you need as a couple $690,000. Mm-hmm. I'll put it to you like this. It's that if you're a couple with $380,000 in super and savings and you invest it into a reasonably safe super fund, a thing called an account-based pension, which is paying you an income of 5% per year, which is the minimum amount for someone that's in their 60s, you're going to be looking at an income from all sources, which includes Centrelink, of $60,704 per year, which I reckon is pretty good, Phil. That's pretty good. And when you own everything, and this is assuming you're a home-owning couple, $60,704.
That's tax-free, of course.
That's tax-free, and you get the concession cards and all those bits and pieces. And the Superannuation Association says, well, a comfortable lifestyle will cost about $69,000 a year. And when you see what they include, they've got, you know, tickets to the footy, gym membership, travel every year. It's a pretty lavish lifestyle. And the thing I find is that while you may well do that in the early years of retirement, by the time you get into your later 70s and 80s, you do tend to slow down. And I've got no end of couples that tell me that they've got more money coming in than they can actually spend. Mm. And they wish they'd done some of those more fun things in the early years of retirement when the knee was in full flight and, you know, the hip wasn't gone and things like that. So it's a fact that as you age, the income needs decline and therefore the capital decline. And as I think I've said on this show a couple of times, the decision really is how much do you want to leave your kids? You know, I'm here for a good time, not a long time. Yeah. Or I want to leave them a fortune. Well, you know, everyone, it's your choice. But I certainly come from the camp that says, well, I'm going to do what I want to do in my retirement and the kids can have what's left. We've set them up nicely.
Yes, exactly. Mm. Go skiing, as they
yes,
say.
Exactly.
We've got plenty of calls on the board. Let's take some. Let's start with Bianca, who's been waiting on. Hi, Bianca.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi, Bianca.
Hello, gentlemen. How are we?
Very well, thanks. What's your question?
Good. How can I help? Yeah.
Well, I have actually saved up a little bit of money. I've managed to save my home deposit, which we, my fiancé and I have now bought our first family home.
Mm-hmm.
So we have, so in my bank account now is my leftovers that I didn't mm-hmm. really need, and I wanted to leave myself a little kitty. And it's just, you know, $50,000. It's sitting there. It's collecting a bit of dust. I just don't know now what my next step would be and what to do with that $50,000, just so it's a little nest egg or a little bit of security. What would you suggest?
So, Bianca, you said it was a deposit. Do I take it that you guys have also got a mortgage?
Yes, we do, yes.
Okay. All right. Now, sometimes the best thing to do is the most boring thing to do, and this is going to be one of those occasions. The best thing to do is to stick that $50K into the mortgage, either as an offset account so that it's there if you need it, and it's going to reduce the interest cost. Now, the way to look at it is the average mortgage is now costing people about 6.1%. For you to earn 6.1% after tax, you basically have to earn about 9% before tax, pay the tax, you end up with about that 6.1% in your hand. So it's like having an investment that's earning 9% pre-tax simply by having that money offsetting the mortgage. So that's a really, really good deal. Now, what you might do is have a bit of a dabble, and I've got no problem with perhaps doing something like that. And that might be, and again, not right at the moment, probably because of the turmoil that's going on, but you might wait for a couple of months when you see if there's a big correction and maybe take $5,000 or $10,000 and invested in a pool of shares, perhaps through a thing called an exchange traded fund, which you can get through a discount online share broker, and that might become a handy little nest egg that you might use, I don't know, one day for renovations or school fees or something like that, which could grow. So, but you know, as I say, as boring as it is, knocking off that mortgage is really important, because once you've got the mortgage cleared up, then that frees up the cash flow from those mortgage payments, and then you can perhaps really start looking at some investing. I'm a very keen advocate of protecting those core assets like the family home. I think that, you know, ideally we invest with the surplus money, but we protect those core assets so that if it really, really gets tough one day, no one's going to come and take the keys to your house if you can avoid that.
Okay.
Hope that helps,
yeah.
Bianca.
Thanks, yeah. Bianca. Bye-bye. 1-300.
Sometimes I'm boring, aren't I, Phil? But, you know.
No, that's why you're here. Some people have to hear the unvarnished truth. G'day, Bob.
Hi, how are you doing?
Not too bad.
Hey, Bob.
What's your question, Bob?
Mine relates to reverse mortgages. Mm-hmm. I heard a commentator the other day recommend reverse mortgages, but not before the age of 70.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
Bob, so what, for everyone else's benefit, a reverse mortgage is a mortgage that you take out against your family home or another piece of real estate. And unlike a normal mortgage where you repay the interest and the principal, with these mortgages you don't pay anything. And in fact, what happens is that the interest accrues and builds up with the principal, so that eventually when the property is sold, the proceeds, a slice of the proceeds go to repay the amount that you borrowed originally and the compound interest that's owing. Now, why people talk about doing it in the latter stages of life, Bob, is because the shorter the compounding period, the less the impact will be on your loved ones. So, you know, if you took out a reverse mortgage at, say, 65 and lived to 95, you've got 30 years of compounding interest effects. And I can tell you now, there'll be people listening to us that took out reverse mortgages in the 90s and the early 2000s who were kicking themselves because the impact of the interest has been huge when they've come to sell their home, perhaps to move into an aged care facility or to get into something smaller. You know, I've seen debts that started started at $50,000, where the lender is now requiring a repayment of $290,000,
$300,000.
It's just extraordinary how it grows. So,
well, this is the sort of effect of compounding, isn't it?
It is. And that's why, Bob, they're probably talking about 70 as being the minimum. Look, one of the other alternatives you might consider, and anyone consider, is a thing called the Home Equity Access Scheme, which is effectively Centrelink's answer to reverse mortgages. Reverse mortgages offered by the conventional private market, upcharging interest rates, I think it's about 8 or 9%. You can take out a thing called the Home Equity Access Scheme through Centrelink. The interest rate, I'm pretty sure, is 4.95%, so much, much less. Importantly, you can take it out either as an instalment amount, or you can take it out as a couple of lump sums through the year. So a single, the most a single can access under the Home Equity Access Scheme is about $42,000 a year, and a couple can access about $62,000 a year under the Home Equity Access Scheme. So like any loan, Bob, the lower the interest rate, the better off you are ultimately. So if that's an option, then that might be the second thing to do. But again, I said at the outset to Bianca that, in my view, the home is sacrosanct. It's kind of a last thing you would do, trying to tie up your home in a reverse mortgage, whether it's the government version or a private version or a company version. So, you know, the longer you can put it off, the better off you'll probably be. Mm. Or probably not you, your loved one. No, take that back. If you move into aged care, I've seen it have a major impact on the amount of money that's available for the deposit.
All right, yeah. Bob. Jill from Yamba. Hi, Jill.
Oh, hi. I'd like to know, I'm on a full pension and I'm looking to sell my house, which I own. Now, I might take a little while to find a new house.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, is it true that for the next 2 years I still receive the pension?
Yeah, so it's a concession that was brought in on the 1st of January. It's been around for a while, but it got enhanced, if you like. And the way that works, Jill, is that the proceeds from your family home, you can stick it into any account, even one of those ones that I've mentioned is earning 5% per annum. The most that Centrelink will deem it's earning is actually 0.25%. So you are absolutely beating the system if you stick it into a good bank account that's paying a high rate of interest. In fact, that high rate of interest might almost cover the rent while you're building the new place. The exemption that you're talking about is under the asset test for 2 years. So that, again, it used to be 1 year. It's now 2 years. Now, under special circumstances, so if you've signed up with a builder, and the builder says, oh, Jill, it's going to be ready this time in, 2025. And it turns out that there's material shortages and they can't get the tradies or whatever. And it's longer. You can generally apply to get it extended another 12 months. So potentially, if you're building a place, you could have up to 3 years. But the legislation says 2 years without any questions asked, exempt from the asset test. And you would also be able to stick it in a bank account and the deemed rate of interest would be 0.25%. The other point to it, Jill, sorry for going on so much, but it's a great question, is if you did rent, believe it or not, you'd also probably qualify for rent assistance. You'd get up a rent payment of potentially $157.20 per fortnight, providing your rent was more than $175 per week, which is almost certain. Now, that's great for people like Jill. I can tell you, Phil, there are people that would dearly love that rent assistance rate to go up a lot more than it currently is at $157.20. But that's where it is. So there you go, Jill. You've got quite a few options and, yes, have fun.
All right, Jill, thank you. Mohammed from Perth. G'day, Mohammed.
Hi, Phil. Hi, Dad. How are you going?
Yeah, not good. Bad. What's your question, Mohammed?
There's this federal, the Labor government promised a scheme that's about to come out in the next financial year that where they'll pitch in 40% of your house payment, house price to help you buy a new house for first time buyers. So I was just wondering, we have to pay that money back. So if you go with that scheme, will you be better off or worse off getting that scheme? I mean, you have to pay based on the price of your house at the time of repayment. So,
Mohammed, I must confess, you've got me there. I'm not familiar with a scheme which sounds very generous, the government would kick in 40% of the value.
What are you saying here, Mohammed? Is this a state or federal government scheme, sir?
So this is a federal government, but also Victoria also has a state government one, which is called VHF Home Buyer Fund, where they kick in 25% of that money, not 40% that the federal government promised.
I must confess, there are a couple of schemes being kicked around, Mohammed, to do with social housing and you know, making things easier for first home buyers. There are various concessions which are state based on stamp duty waivers, and there's special an insurance waiver, if you like, on the cost of the mortgage lenders insurance schemes which are operating, and there's other concessions. I'm definitely not familiar of the scheme you're talking about, and I'll do it as a bit of homework, Mohammed, but I think it's probably worth asking a few questions of builders and people like that, because they'd be the ones that would know of the schemes if they exist. I'm just a bit worried that sometimes on social media, Phil, there's all these different things come up, and you know, you kind of follow them down a rabbit hole, and all of a sudden you're investing in something that you really shouldn't be, or putting your money into something.
I'm not aware of a federal government scheme which gives you 40% of the house, cost of a house. No.
And I just worry about something that suddenly turns into, well, if you pay us, you know, $2,000, we'll set you up, and then you never see your money again.
Yeah.
Just be very careful of those sorts of things.
Yes, be wary. Thanks, Mohammed. My texter says, I can't believe your guest is giving planning advice to effectively scam the UK government. If an equivalent plan was being spruced about Australia and the UK, your listeners would be enraged. Well, I'll defend you, Nick, but this is not a scam. This is the system. It's just the system. That's the system that the UK government is offering.
Yeah. And look, it's a comment I sometimes get, Phil, when people like, you know, I'm explaining to people like Jill how to use the system to sort of get into a home and get a rent and all that sort of stuff. My view is that we have a really good social security system, welfare system. It has some really tight rules, and it makes it arguably the most complicated in the world.
Yep.
What I find is that people have misunderstandings about those rules and end up spending a lot of their own money when really, had they known how the system operates, they would have been able to have had a much more pleasant retirement and had a bit of money left at the end of it to pay for the funeral and things like that. There's a lot of misinformation out there. So my rule of thumb is, as long as you stick to the rules, and I will never, ever say anything that's illegal in any way shady, but if you understand arguably the world's most complicated retirement income system, it's pretty good. It's pretty good, and that's what we're about.
Peter says, Phil, in the last 3 months I've seen 2 3-bedroom houses above the flood line for sale in Leeton in New South Wales for under $230,000.
Wow.
Yeah, okay, that'd be pretty rare.
It's starting to happen.
Uncle Gavin says, all my cousins in Canada have who worked in the UK have all bought their UK pension.
Yeah.
There you go. So now it's not a scam. Julia, I don't know what's going on with trains on the North Shore line in Sydney. No, but anyway, if anyone does, let me know. Well, I'll pass
and
the
news being
on.
In Perth, I certainly can't help.
No, that's right. Are credit unions classified as a bank? Are the deposits guaranteed?
Yes.
Says D in Norwich.
Yes. So in Australia, we call them authorised deposit taking institutions, or ADIs.
Mm-hmm.
All ADIs are regulated by the Australian Prudential Regulating Authority, which is nicknamed APRA. Well, that's the acronym, I should say. And the list of names includes anyone with an Australian banking licence, which includes the big banks, the big four or five, or credit unions and building societies and online banks, Phil, providing they're operating in Australia under an Australian banking licence. So those names like Rabobank and ME Bank and UBank and the ING, all those guys are all captured by the financial claims scheme. And that's why, you know, Canstar's good because they don't just limit it to things where they get a kickback. Canstar.com.au lists all of the banks and all of the savings accounts across Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And before I came on earlier, I had a look tonight. You can get, you know, the best rate's 5.1%. It's not a term deposit. You don't lock your money up for 6 months or whatever. It's literally at call. And it's brilliant. And after the honeymoon period of 5%, it drops back to, I don't know, 4% or something, which is better than the term deposits I've offered by most of the big banks, to be honest.
Mm. Yep. Mm. All right. Carolyn from Carringbar. G'day, Carolyn.
Hi, Phil. How are you?
Well, thanks.
I just wanted to say there are the home equity schemes. There's one run by New South Wales government as well. There's one in Queensland, one in Victoria, and the federal government one will be coming online next year. What it is there's so with the New South Wales government one, they will stump up 30% of the price of a house up to value of 950. If you're building a house, they will stump up 40%. And so they own an equity, like an equity part.
Oh, okay. So it's an equity ownership thing. Yeah. Okay.
It's an equity ownership thing, and it's through Bendigo Adelaide Bank are doing the loan.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
But you have to be. It's like certain conditions. So
sure.
You would have to be either over 50 and single, a single parent, or you can.
So it's kind of a social housing type thing, is it? It's a
sort
it's
of
as much
like
as
that.
Yeah.
So a nursing, police,
right,
ambulance. Those people qualify for the thing, but and you can have a minimum of 2% deposit to purchase.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So
thanks, Carolyn.
So it's to help people. That's
all right.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's
we had a couple of texts about it too.
Yeah,
I mean, the
good.
Eligibility requirements are pretty tight, apparently.
You know,
they
are everyone learns something here, Phil.
Yeah, no, exactly. They're legit.
Me too.
They're legit
yeah.
schemes. They're called shared equity schemes.
Yeah, okay. So. And they have been around for a little while. And, that's great.
Okay. Yeah, there is a federal one, apparently, as well. Hmm. Ian from Serpentine. Sorry, Ian, you've been waiting on there. We've had quite a few calls. What's your you wanted to have a query about the UK pension scheme?
Yes, please. Good evening, gentlemen. I served in the British Forces for 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm citizen of the UK, and I'm also a citizen of Australia.
Yep.
I'm interested in this pension scheme. How does it, so for someone like myself who's worked there and paid tax for 9 years,
yeah,
do I just have to do one more year?
Yeah.
And then I'm,
yeah.
And I could pay that by that $100 and something per year. Or?
Yeah, so effectively what happens for you, Ian, is that you're right. You've got 9 years. You need 10 years to actually get a payment. The three-year eligibility is that you're in the scheme, but 10 years is what you need to get 10/35 of the full rate of British pension. So if you pay one more year and you qualify for these things called Class 2 contributions, £163, you'd get your 10/35. But my point is that you should take advantage of being able to back pay, because each year of £163 you pay, you pick up another 1/35 of the pension. So, I mean, it works out to be, an extra £4 or £5 a week for the rest of your life. It's an absolute no-brainer as far as the investment's concerned. One other point, even though you might be, and you sound relatively young now, the proportion of the pension that you get is whatever the pension is in the year that you retire. So right at the moment, the full rate of English pension is £203.85 per week. By the time you get there, maybe in 10 years' time, it could be £400 per week and you would get 10/35 of £400. So if you like, it continues to increase at the British inflation rate. Once you get to pension age and you start to receive a payment, it doesn't go up anymore ever. And that's been a source of some friction for the Brits. But that's the point. So in fact, it's a protected investment in a sense, because it keeps rising with the UK inflation rate.
Okay.
Lovely. Thank you.
Thanks, Ian. Bye-bye. Mm. More questions. Gary in Queensland. Hi, Gary.
Yeah, hi. I have a similar question. It's I was in the British Forces, Air Force, for approximately 6 years and worked a couple of years before that.
Yep.
Now, I'm 66, and I'm looking at retiring possibly in a year's time. Can I forward pay that in 1 year?
Yeah, you can. You could go back the full 16 years, as we've mentioned. So 6 years, potentially you could bring it up to 22/35 of the pension. Phil, I might mention my website again, netplan.com.au.
Netplan?
.com.au.
Okay.
On there, there's an article that explains exactly how this works, but as just as importantly, how to contact the UK, right? So there's actually a phone number that you can ring, especially for people that are offshore, and you get what's called a forecast sent to you, and that'll tell you what your current entitlements are. In that, you'll also get instructions on how to make those back payments. As I said, it was going to be shutting down on the 5th of April next week, but they've been so inundated with this special 16-year deal, they've extended it out to the 31st of July. So worthwhile.
NetPlan, is it N-E-T?
Yeah, NetPlan, oneword.com.au.
NetPlan.com.au. Have a look at it, Gary.
But am I on pensionable age in the UK this year?
Yep.
So once you've hit pensionable age, you can't. You can only go back. You can only. How can I put it? If you were 70 years of age, you'd be 4 years past it. Normally, you can only put back 6 years worth. You would only then be allowed to do 2 years worth. Right. So now that you're only just turning 66, I'm pretty sure you can go back the full 6 years or even the 16 years if you wanted to.
Have a look at the website.
It's on the forecast.
Netplan.com.au, Gary.
Or Google UK pensions. You can go off to the UK website and get lost amongst it like the Centrelink site here.
Thank you. Mooney Ponds, Rishi's with us. Hi, Rishi.
Hi. Thanks, gentlemen, for taking my call.
Pleasure.
My question's about more about the money in an offset account. So I've got a mortgage for my home through one of those low-lending mortgage, non-bank lenders.
Yep.
And they've offered me a mortgage account, and they put pretty much most of our savings in there. Yep. Now, I don't believe that organization is an ADI because the bank account is actually held at an ANZ. So what my understanding is that money is not secured by the government guarantee.
It probably isn't. If it's not an ADI, it's not covered by the FCS.
Okay. And secondly, if the organisation was to go bust, if the mortgage group lender was to go bust, would they then take that money that's in the offset account into consideration, or that's because it's an offset account, it's not taken into consideration?
Look,
would I lose all the money?
It's a great question, and I don't actually know the answer. It's probably one for an insolvency expert that might be listening to us. I would assume that the money they owe you becomes a liability of the institution, right? So it becomes part of the big mix of assets and liabilities it's held. And, you know, at the very worst case scenario, Richie, you become an unsecured creditor for the part of the offset. But I guess I honestly don't know because, you know, I guess that's the difference. If you've actually paid it off the mortgage, then your mortgage is reduced. The liability is no longer there, is it? Whereas as an offset, it's actually a separate account.
It's a separate account. Yeah. And that's what I was trying to understand because... Mm.
Rishi, can I ask a question? Would you have more than 80% equity in the deal now with your offset account? Yes. Look, you know, it's absolutely worth doing a bit of shopping around because one thing that's happened as things have tended to slow down is absolutely a buyer's market now for finance. And if you're in a pretty good position, and I'm talking about someone with more than 20% equity, it is worth having a bit of a squeeze to see what sort of a deal you can get on a new loan. Unfortunately, Phil, people that have got a fixed interest mortgage and they don't have more than 20% equity in the deal will struggle because they don't have much bargaining power there. But if you've got more than 20%, you're in a particularly strong position at the moment, Rishi. So you might weigh up shopping around a bit to see if you can move the loan.
I think I've done that. I'm in a very good position in terms of the interest rate wise. Okay. The only thing is, is that it's not an ADI, which is just getting to me since I've heard about all the Silicon Valley banks.
Yes. Suddenly, we develop a keen interest in security when things like that happen, isn't it?
Thanks, Rishi. Good on you. Where can I go to get to help us to gain access to the UK pension, please? Says Jane, netplan.com.au.
As a starting point. Yeah. Look, and to be fair, there's other places doing it, Phil.
Google, how do I get a UK pension?
Yeah.
Jim from Ballarat. G'day, Jim.
G'day, fellas. How are you going?
Not bad.
My question is this. My wife and I are 61 years of age. We still have $250,000 owing on our home loan. We both work full-time. And I was thinking the other day, we've got about $700,000 there in super combined, whether we take $250,000 of that out now, pay out our home loan, and we'd still, say, 5 years to run before retirement. What we're paying on a home loan, I'd rather be paying that into a superannuation fund.
Yep. Well, Jim, nailed it. That's what I'd be doing. Now, there's a couple of ways that you can do it. If you're still working and you haven't changed jobs since turning 60, you can't technically just go and whip your superannuation out. You can set up one of these things called a transition to retirement account-based pension. And while they're very popular, they're not that popular with me. However, this is one instance where they are a good idea. And what they would allow you to do is you and your good lady to set up an account-based pension, a transition to retirement account-based pension. And you could withdraw up to 10%. Sorry?
Hang on, Jim. Yeah.
Who would you set that up through?
Yeah, the same super fund, your existing super fund, they would have them. Right, okay. Yep. And you can move your $700,000 across to an account-based pension. You might leave a little bit left in super for the new contributions to come into, but you can access up to 10% of the account balance per year. So straight away, you could knock $70,000 off the mortgage, right? Next year, you could lock another $70,000 less the 70 you've taken out, $63,000 off the mortgage. And you could get rid of your mortgage quick, smart over the next 3 or 4 years. Now, what you've now done is you've cleared up the mortgage. And as you said, you've now got that separate cash flow that you can re-inject back into super using salary sacrifice or whatever. If you, this is a really weird thing, Jim, about the rules on super. The rules say that if turning 60, you cease employment, then your money becomes unrestricted. Now, the quirk in the rules is it doesn't mean that you have to stop your main job. You could get a part-time job down the local hardware shop and quit after a couple of months or weeks, or a couple of months, and you've actually satisfied a condition of release to access your super.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
So,
all right, Jim.
and then because you're over 60, it's all tax-free. That's exactly what I'd be doing. And then, you know, as those interest rates rise, and the average, as I said, now is over 6%, you know, that's guaranteed return on your investment, isn't it?
Mm.
The money saved. Yep.
All right. Gillian says on the text line, thanks, Jim. Gillian says Centrelink can help you claim a UK pension. Contact Centrelink International Services.
They'll do it when you have that. So one of the requirements when you claim a Centrelink benefit is that you must claim any entitlements to overseas pensions. I'm not sure they'll do it as a service when you're not there. Okay.
Natalie and Jenny both say the netplan.com.au site's crashed. It's obviously good advice.
Oh, dear. Well, okay. That's look, to be fair, Phil, there is another organisation, British Pensioner in Australia, bpia.org.au is another site. It's just a bit more to read, if you like. bpia.org.au. But NetPlan, we've tried to summarise it all into a reasonably
keep
succinct.
Keep persist. It'll come good. It'll come good. That's very funny.
I'll have to pay another dollar to get more.
Well, it's the power of the nightlife audience, you see.
Thank you, Phil.
That's right, Nick.
Dear.
Jane says, God, no wonder the UK's in trouble with that pension.
Well, you know, here's a little bit of history. Apparently, someone was telling me that we had the exact same scheme as so much of what happens in the UK was replicated by us up until not so long ago. And apparently it was the Menzies government in the 50s who accessed the pension scheme to pay for the Snowy Mountain scheme.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of the capital went. Post World War II, there wasn't any around, so they raided the fund. The UK, on the other hand, have kept theirs going, and that's actually a funded scheme, pretty much, which is good.
Yep. Toby's got a little nest egg for his granddaughter. Hello.
Oh yeah.
Good evening. Hi guys.
Yeah. Hi Toby.
Yes, my granddaughter received about $4,000 from her grandmother, and. Yep. She's 4 years old. I don't really know what to do with it.
You mean your granddaughter or your daughter, Toby?
My daughter, sorry. Yes, daughter. Yeah, okay. That's right. So I don't really know what to do with this money, just to tuck it away for her for later on.
Right. So a couple of really easy and good things you can do. Given that, what's your daughter's name?
Melody.
Melody. So given that Melody's a few years from perhaps buying a house or anything like that, you could take a reasonably long-term view of where to invest that money. So one thing you could do is you could set up an online share broking account with one of those big online share fund things and set it up with Melody's name in there as you and you as the trustee. Now, you don't need any paperwork for it, but you simply need to nominate that it's actually Melody's account and you're the trustee for it. Now, you could then go and buy some shares using Commonwealth Bank shares or something like that, or a thing called an exchange traded fund, which is a blend of shares, and just basically park the money into that thing. Now, the big thing about it is it behaves like the share market, so you'll get the dividends that you can reinvest back in the fund, providing you, Toby, as dad, derive no benefit from that money that's been set aside for Melody. When she gets to 18 years of age and she's an adult, you could actually transfer that investment across to her without capital gains tax issues, right? So, again, providing you don't derive any benefit yourself, set it up with Melody's name attached to it, then then she could benefit from that when she turns 18. And if you stuck, you know, $4,000 into shares, and look, I don't know what happens over the next couple of years, but I can tell you that on the law of statistics and averages, over the next 14 years or so, there's a very good chance that Melody will have 20 or 30 grand there that she could use towards a new car or uni studies or whatever. So good on her, and good on grandma.
Is there some way to rate ETFs?
Like, there are some websites. It's a good question. There's a couple of research sites out there. You know, things like Morningstar, Motley Fool. A couple of those have these rankings and stuff. But look, most of the sort of the low cost, well run ETF funds tend to be what's called index funds, where they replicate, say, the top 200 shares in Australia. So you get the good and the bad. The idea of an ETF is it's pretty easy to run because there's not much thought involved in it. You just sort of set the thing up and leave it. Mm. And on that basis, most of them are very passive, which means they tend to follow the index.
Mm, okay. All right. Good luck with it, Toby. Mayeen. Hi, Mayeen. Sorry, you're waiting there.
Yes. Thank you, Philip, and your guest. Good evening.
Pleasure. Good evening. What's your question, Mayeen?
My question is, I am 61 and my wife is 51 now. So in 6 years' time, I can be retired. We're both working in a New South Wales state government organization. Yep. My plan is that if I retired in 67,
yep,
we still have around $600,000 mortgage in our house. But at the end, on my 67, maybe our super, for my work, $300,000, and for me, $500,000, around $800,000. So if we paid off our mortgage, maybe at that time, $500,000, still we can have $300,000. But my question is, when I retired in 67, my wife will be 57. She may not be willing to work anymore after my retirement. She also like to retire. Then what will be the implication if I want to claim some age pension or something? What is the implication if my wife is not working because she's only 57?
So the good news is that your wife may want to still work maybe a little bit part-time, whatever. But the point is that the most that you'd be eligible to receive is half the couple's rate of pension. So if that were today, Mayeen, then you'd be entitled to a maximum amount of, what have we got, $800 and something dollars a fortnight, maximum amount that you'd receive. Your wife, unfortunately, wouldn't receive anything until she reaches age pension age. After a period of time, she may qualify for things like job seeker and stuff, but that will also require her to be actively looking for work, which might not work for you. However, your strategy of getting rid of the mortgage is excellent. I would use Masupa to do that. You might also consider what I was talking about before, the transition to retirement arrangement, where you can actually start to access your super now to repay the mortgage. Once that's freed up, of course, then that means that the payments that you were spending on mortgage payments can be reinjected back into super. So there's a couple of scenarios to look for, but unfortunately, the most you could receive if it were today is that figure, as I said, of $802 a fortnight.
Sorry to interrupt you, sir. If I retired on that 67, can I claim 100% age pension, and then my wife need to look after some part-time work?
Subject to assets and income, Mayeen. So your wife could, in theory, earn up to, what's it, about $4,900 a year, and you would still qualify for your full pension. But look, it's so far away, my friend, that these numbers will change a lot between now and when you hit 67. So yeah, perhaps go and have a look at chat with Centrelink just before you retire when you're 66. Talk to the Financial Information Service officers, which is a free service offered by Centrelink. You can lay out your scenario at that time and they'll tell you what sort of entitlements you can expect.
Okay. All right, Mayeen, good luck with it. Thank you. Hey, how about this? Nate has just informed us. He's commenting, gee, look at the global reach of nightlife. The Australian, after the discussion of UK pensions, the Australian dollar just rose against the UK pound.
They're all buying pounds, Phil. Well, it's blown up our website, so thanks very much.
I thought it had blown up the website as well. Just again, netplan, netplan.com.au.
Yep. Click the articles tab, and there's the first article there is about UK pensions and how to claim.
Okay, all right. Now, look, I think we've just about run out of time for questions. But just before you go again, that website, netplan.com.au, check your eligibility for your pension entitlements. And
don't think you need $1 million, because you don't,
to retire comfortably.
No, you don't. You don't need $1 million. In fact, you've written an entire book about this.
Might have to print more of them one of these days.
Yeah, a couple of texters saying, "Gee, all this discussion of people with dough, with kids struggling to pay rent, etc." Oh, look, I take that point, but this is not a society where, you know, at the moment we've got equity between the generations, unfortunately.
Plenty of times, Phil, if you're a home-owning person in Australia, they're very lucky. Those that aren't, it is extremely tough, and we're not resiling from that at all.
Jenny from Perth says, "Yay, the netplan.com.au is up and running again."
Extra dollar, that's all it took. Bit more bandwidth.
All right. On you, Nick. Thanks very much. Anyway.
Pleasure.
Nick Bruning with us, and Nick will be back a bit further down the track. Thanks to all the texters and callers.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.